I don't want a pickle. I just want to ride on my motorcycle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is the Noco Moto Podcast, episode 165, I believe, which is season 5, episode 6? Something like that. We'll find out. Anyway, I am your host, MotoGP, and with me is your other host, Swiggy.
Yo.
Coming to you from my place, which is Auxiliary Noco Moto Podcast headquarters. But, you know, I did spend some time at Moto One Podcast Network Studios this week. Let's see. So the president came up and he was annoying me. So he asked for a meeting and I was like, I'm busy. Well, what I was playing Risk with the maintenance guy, and the president, I guess, was mad. He wanted to have a meeting about how much kind of cross promotion we've been doing with the Misfits in Cleveland Moto, basically just mentioning other motorcycle podcasts. I mean, he wasn't so much mad about that, but as I said, we were playing Risk. I painted a Risk board in the parking lot and was using actual employees as troops. And I guess he thought that wasn't a good use of company resources. But whatever, because, you know, I think the cross promotion's good. And I'm going to keep promoting the Misfits in Cleveland Moto and Creative Riding on this show as much as Creative Riding has pissed us off. So anyway, I don't give a shit. Let's see, what are we going to talk about in this episode? We are going to do kind of a shorter one. Well, I don't know. We say we're going to do a shorter one, right? This has been attempted before.
We better.
But we're going to maybe do a couple emails. We'll do a couple emails. I think we should do those up front as well. We've got a little bit of a corrections and omissions. I guess we have two. We're going to probably talk some GP at the end of it. Wasn't a huge week for GP, but there's a couple interesting takeaways. Of course, best worst bike in the world this week, and we've got an update on the electric bike build. So I think that's... Oh, and we've also got a bike release review sort of situation. And it's a bike that's not out yet. Our favorite kind of bike review, the hypothetical bullshit review. So, let's see here. I think let's do the corrections and omissions because we usually do those first. So, last week I felt I was a little harsh with my doubling down, as I usually do, on my position about the Ducati Hypermotard. And not that I owe it to anybody, but I thought a little clarification might be better. I'm a little sick. I got sick for my kids, by the way, if I sound stuffed up. It's because I am. So, the Ducati Hypermotard. I was texting back and forth with Bruce from This Motorcycle Life. Because we chit-chat, you know. We kibitz, right? So I was kibitzing with Bruce. And I kind of got my thoughts in order about the Hypermotard. Now, what I've always said in the past holds true. If you have a Hypermotard, or you're excited about your Hypermotard, or you're just excited about the Hypermotard, that's fine. You're not dumb for liking it. You should always remember that we're just pretending to be this worked up about bikes, right? It's way healthier to pretend to be upset about stupid, frivolous things than to go out into the world waving a flag for all kinds of causes you might only be half into, right? Like, let's just, you know, put things in perspective. It's only motorcycles. And listening back to last week's episodes, I thought I kind of came across a little harsh. So I found the way to explain what bothers me about the Hypermotard. And it is the while you were sleeping of motorcycles. While You Were Sleeping was this movie from 1995 with Sandra Bullock and Bill Pullman and Peter Gallagher. And this movie has an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's not a bad movie. It's a perfectly serviceable little rom-com. But it has one of the dumbest premises of anything going in anything cinematic in the 90s. Sandra Bullock's like a bus driver or some shit. Anyway, she saves this guy she's got a crush on from being hit by a bus, but he's never met her. She just knows him because he rides the bus or some shit. I can't remember why she's got a crush on him. Anyway, she goes and sees him in the hospital. She like rides in the ambulance and crap. Because I don't know. She saves him from dying, but he somehow gets knocked out. Anyway, he's in a coma. She says like, oh, I was going to marry him or whatever. And this nurse is like, oh, you're his fiance. And then everyone in the family is like, oh, you're his fiance. And for some reason, everyone just has to go with this lie for 90 minutes. No one second guesses this. Right?
Okay.
Then she falls in love with the dude's brother, Bill Pullman, right? It's a perfectly fine rom-com, but the premise is fucking dumb. Right? It doesn't hold up to scrutiny. This is my problem with the hypermotard. Someone at Ducati went, oh, it's the next evolution in supermoto. And no one questioned it. And the whole thing was produced. And if you think about it for more than a couple minutes, you're like, this, the premise of this motorcycle doesn't hold up. Now, this motorcycle, if there was a Rotten Tomatoes for motorcycles, I'm sure it would have an 80% Rotten Tomatoes score, right? But the premise is still fucking dumb. And that's what bothers me about the Hypermotard. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think...
Because I'm not real precious about the representation of supermotos and what isn't and isn't a supermoto. It doesn't matter. It's just a dumb premise for a motorcycle.
Right. I mean, because there are a lot... I mean, performance-wise, I think there's a lot that people love about it. But if it could be done... You know, if there was, like, a core model that did all the same things... then it would be totally awesome. And then if like the Hypermotard was like a cast off of that, you know, kind of like how people release cafe versions.
You mean like the Scrambler and the Desert Sled?
Sort of. But well, more like how there's like a cafe version of like the SV650.
Okay. Yeah.
Where it's just a different flavor of another bike. But
well, I mean, it kind of is that way. It's really just a Ducati monster.
Is it, though?
They should have called it, like, the Montard or something. That's what I'm going to call it. Anyway, that's sort of my reset on last week. Like, do I hate this bike deep down? No, but now I at least sort of understand what it is and why I dislike it. So I'm at a greater place of peace. But yeah, if you like the Hypermotard, it's fucking fine. I don't, because if it makes you feel like you're on the next evolution of a supermoto, then that's great, because how a motorcycle makes you feel is super duper important. But personally for me, I don't think it would be able to make me feel the way it's supposed to, because I know the idea is dumb. Yeah. So I think we should go to emails now, because emails contains another little correction and omissions. And there's only two emails, so we can just blast them out quick.
Does it?
Yeah, the one about the one making fun of us for not realizing the
oh, right. Where did it go? Oh yeah. No name attached. But this guy just says electric motorcycles. Wow, you guys must be behind the curve on this one. These have been out for almost a while now. And then he linked to a bunch of videos of ridiculous high-powered electric unicycles.
Yeah. Well, so you did ride the one, and I went back and looked at the photos from that first AIM Expo, and it is straight up a unicycle. It's one great big fat wheel. I thought it was maybe two wheels side by side that kind of looked that way, but no, they have been around, yeah, for several years at least. And in fact, you have ridden one. Well, in your defense, it did have the handlebars, but now, yeah, people have, now that everyone is so comfortable with these things, they're, a lot of them are ditching the handlebars. Well, a lot of them do still have the handlebars, actually, though. But yeah, although I still don't have not found one that is the satisfying seat that you just sit on with, you know, one that looks like a traditional unicycle. They seem to be this thing of you I don't know how to describe it. You kind of hug it with your ankles. Like, there's not a seat. You still stand on it like it's a hoverboard.
Right.
So I would like, personally, I'd like to just see the real super satisfying electric unicycle. I want to see the old school seat that you sit on, right? And all that crap. It's probably harder to operate that way. I know. I just want to see it. But yeah, these are as dumb as the one wheel, in my opinion, mostly because of what they cost and what the limited use of it is. Right. And then we have a second email.
Yeah. So this is from Ernie, who does the big motorcycle meetup on Wednesdays over in Denver. And he says, hey, I just completed the American Super Camp class up in Eaton. I heard about from y'all and thought it was a great suggestion. We had Robbie Peterson, his son Cameron Peterson, and Jake Gagne as instructors. The cool part is these guys are based in Loveland, so they have one in January, one in the summer, and sometimes a third one. Anyways, thanks for putting that on my radar.
Yeah, I'm going to do this the next time it comes around. It turns out I couldn't have done it for a multitude of reasons, one being injured. So I would have wasted the $500 if I was trying to do it anyway. And on top of that, I was a little short on funds, and I've got, like, I don't know, just a really weird transition in my life and work that I'm doing right now. But yes, I'm totally going to do that. And oh my gosh, I'm so, because we've interviewed Jake Gagne, like, there's a little bit of history there, and he'd been like, oh, you guys, great. Like, oh, that would have been super cool to connect with him again for that. And yeah, Peterson as well. Like, oh. So I guess we should just describe what American Super Camp is for people again, since we've just brought it up and we've got a bunch of new listeners. This is $500 for 2 days, I think, but it's like 2 8-hour days. And they put you on little 125 two-stroke dirt bikes. They might even be like 150 four-strokes. Actually, I think they're 150 four-strokes. But they're small dirt bikes. But they just have you do nothing. Well, I can't say everything of what they do. But they get a big oval dirt track and they wet it down and all this stuff. And top level racers instruct you and get you just swinging the back end out around curves. You know, steering with the rear wheel and everything. I guess the school's sort of famous for giving all the instructors sticks to hit you with as you're going by if you don't have the proper form. And they just kick your ass for a couple days and beat good habits into you and just get you way more comfortable getting the bike tipped over, getting the back end. They teach you to flat track race, basically. It's just that building, it's that fundamental of getting you ready to ride more aggressively. And it all translates to the track. But it's kind of like the wheelie school. They teach you to wheelie because it's super important. You know, on a racetrack, on a 600 super sport, are you getting the back end out and steering with the back wheel? Well, not all the time anymore. You know, maybe GP guys are to some degree in some turns, but until you have that level of control, right? It's a dice roll on every turn, so they got to teach you to. I'll know more once I do it, but this is a 100% thing that I'm going to do the next time it rolls around. There's no way I'm missing it again. It's too cool. Yeah. So that's it for emails. So should we run into best worst bike now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So here we go. We're going to do best worst bike in the world this week. I know this is going to be the first time for some of you because our listens have really started rocketing off. We've finally gotten to or gotten past the height of our popularity right before we took 4 months off last year or whatever it was. And a lot of that's got to be because of our friends and other podcasts. So here's how it works. Each week, we each pick a different motorcycle. We don't know what each other have picked. It's always a surprise. Are they going to be good or bad choices? Are they going to upset you? Who knows? Just remember, it's a fun way to look at a couple bikes in a way that you might not normally look at them or just completely discover for the first time anyway. Don't get your feelings hurt, okay? Don't get your feelings hurt. Every once in a while, there's a bike, like the Hypermotard or something, that just triggers people. We either get no responses on people being upset about bikes or tons of responses. There's little in between. So what you should do is write a calm and constructive email and send that to contact@nokomotopodcast.com. And you know what? Before you send it, you should leave us a 5-star rating and review somewhere. We're creeping up those iTunes charts pretty well. If you Google motorcycles, moto podcast or whatever in Apple, we pretty much pop up first. But that doesn't mean, you know, like Google couldn't love us more, right? So do all that and just remember, like Sandra Bullock said to Bill Pullman in While You Were Sleeping, there's no crying in motorcycles. Now, Swigs, you have best bike in the world this week.
I do.
And are you ready to reveal it?
I am.
Okay. And the best bike in the world this week is...
the Buddy 125.
Ooh, we did the Buddy Kick before. So the Buddy 125. And you like this better than the 150 or the 170?
I do.
Is it just the value proposition? Because they've all got about the same power.
It is the value proposition. But well, it's not just the value proposition. It's also a combination of, well, some of the design aspects of it, and also just a little bit of the character as well. Because this is absolutely the best bike in the world to a lot of people. It's for people who don't have a commute on the highway, who maybe live in a city where parking is a pain in the ass, or they need to get somewhere, or they're going somewhere where they can park, you know, not in a car spot. It's still got plenty of space to carry what you need to. It's cheap enough for somebody who isn't mechanically inclined and is wary about buying used motorcycles, especially if they're buying for the first time, to just buy outright new affordably and have confidence in what they're getting. In terms of the styling, it's all very neat. It doesn't look technical in any way, like a lot of bikes, modern bikes are now, in a way that really doesn't appeal to a lot of people. It's not appealing to racers. It's not trying to do something that's, you know, super heritage either. It's just kind of, it's a little bit smart, but it's also just, it's not precious either.
It's just a totally up-to-date, honest-to-goodness scooter, modern scooter.
Right. And but it's also something that somebody can get on with confidence because it's enough power. You know, you can hit 50 miles an hour on this. I don't think you'd ever want to.
Yeah, but I was really impressed with it. I felt that the acceleration was very close to my 150 two-stroke Vespa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was different. It was much different kind of power. I mean, it's a CVT transmission and all of that. Like, the torque and peak horsepower ratio is off a little bit. But in general, it was comparable to that. Mm-hmm. I would ride this in traffic in a similar way to my Vespa.
Right. Yeah, and just in terms of the design, there's just the fact that, like, there's little things that are really great for a new rider. Like, I mean, yes, if you drop this, you're going to scratch it up, but you don't really care because it's, first of all, it's like $3,200 brand new, which is nothing crazy. In a lot of places, it can't really depreciate that much because the price of a running bike is, in a lot of places, like $1,500. So even if you damage it, it's not the end of the world. It may suck a little bit, but it's fine. But also, the way it's designed, on both the front and rear, like, the turn signals aren't the furthest, aren't sticking out the furthest. Yeah,
if you drop this, you're not going to break turn signals. The turn signals hang below the handlebars. And in fact, the body of it's pretty narrow. My only complaint about this bike is it's not very roomy. If you're a larger person, and by that I don't even mean fat, I just mean like a little taller or whatever, it can be a little, there's not a huge footwell. Like, your knees are not totally together, but they're pretty close.
Right. But, you know, the turn signal thing is, it's one of those little things where it's like, you know, is it the end of the world if you crack a turn signal or break one off? No. But also, it doesn't, like, ruin your day. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not going to be like, I can't... You know, if you're Mr. Rules, it's not like you're going to effectively have to stop and sit and wait for parts or go to the dealership. It's just always going to be good if you're self-conscious about those things.
Yeah, but it's got a couple little things too that you wouldn't expect. So it's got a USB charger on it. It's got a little more under seat storage than you would expect. It does at least have the front cubby. Well, not a full glove box up front. It's got room to put three beers. Right, and your keys or whatever. So it's not without amenities. It's you can put two people on one, and it's got the power for that, but again, it's space-wise a little cramped. But there is a way that all of that is another huge plus. It's a 125 with 150 performance, but it totally looks like a 50cc scooter.
Yeah.
If you have one of these, you are crazy if you don't put Velcro on your license plate. Right?
Right.
You park this wherever the hell you want. Pull the license plate off, put it in your backpack, throw it under the seat, do whatever, get it out of sight so it looks like a 50cc scooter. And in most places, you can park a 50cc scooter on the sidewalk or wherever the hell you want to. If you live somewhere where parking's an issue, this is your ticket. This is the way to go. You can totally ride in traffic, be going 40, 50 miles an hour on surface streets with everybody totally keeping pace, totally safe, getting amazing mileage with very little maintenance, with just all the plus sides, and not be paying for parking and have enough room to take some things with you. I mean, is it a great grocery getter? I don't know. But I mean, hey, milk crates and luggage racks exist. So add a top box or a luggage rack and a milk crate, and all of a sudden it is a grocery getter. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for me, it's that it looks like a 50cc scooter. It's a 125, but it moves like a 150 or a 175, honestly. In fact, I think with the 150 and the 170, they don't really make more power. They just have a little more torque. I think I remember hearing something like that. I rode the 150 and the 125 at Mid-Ohio, and I couldn't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
What is the cost on these brand new?
It's like $3,200.
Oh yeah. And when Metropolitan's 28, why wouldn't you spend the $400 extra?
Right.
Cause it's five times more bike than a Honda Metropolitan. It really is. They scoot. And I'll tell you what, I like the colors. They come in that cool tangerine that your Vespa is.
Mm-hmm.
Or your whatever thing. Yeah, I could just keep saying nice things about the Buddy 125 all day. Let's see here. It's the design's really good. You can get right to the motor and everything. There's not a lot of body work to remove, which, I mean, isn't a huge deal, but a lot of scooters just insist on having some sort of new modern take on that old Italian scooter thing. And there can be lots of body work to take off to get to things. I like that this is minimalist and doesn't do that. Again, just little things you don't expect. The disc brakes, you know, in a world in which so many budget vehicles still do drums, right? You've got, what else did it have? There's something else that impressed me, but I can't remember. On the Genuine website here, it says it comes with a year of roadside and a 2-year unlimited mileage warranty. I don't know if that's common with scooters. I feel like a lot of scooters come with nothing as far as after sale support.
I don't know. I've never seriously inquired into buying a brand new scooter.
Neither have I, but I feel like, I don't know, Phil will have to fill us in on the realities of that, but it doesn't really seem like a big enough purchase to warrant warranty kind of stuff. But I don't know. Okay. Any other points you wanted to bring up about this?
No, I think we're good to move on. Well, also, I will just point out that, you know, another way this bike is like really unintimidating for a new rider is it's 220 pounds dry as a scooter. So with it's 220 pounds, you know, maybe it goes up to 240, 250 with an insanely low center of mass.
Oh, I remember what else impressed me about it. It comes with a kickstand and a center stand. This is just something I've been on about forever. Loads of supposedly premium bikes not coming with fucking center stands. It drives me fucking crazy. Everything should come with a center stand, and there's no excuse for it. When the Buddy 125 for $3,200 comes with a fucking center stand, why doesn't everything?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't like it, you can just take it off. But how about we just include it, huh? All right. Cool. So we're ready to move on to worst bike in the world this week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. And the worst bike of the world this week is the Virus Alien.
I really don't want to look that up.
Do you want to guess how this is spelt?
Is it V-I-R-U-Z?
V-Y-R-U-S. Alien is spelt A-L-Y-E-N. So this is a boutique motorcycle, and it is the... Now, I normally love a boutique motorcycle. I love boutique motorcycles that most people can't go that far on. This one is... This is beyond stupid, and I hate this. And if I was going to describe this bike as quickly as I could, I would say... This is what's the character name of Fisher Stevens in Hackers?
I have no idea.
Isn't his name like The Virus or something? Hold on.
That sounds right.
What does he play? Oh my gosh, he plays. Oh, I have to look this up. I think it's something. But anyway, this is if that character had a motorcycle, not a skateboard, this is the motorcycle he would have. Where is it? Oh, the Plague. Sorry, he's the Plague. The Plague would own the Virus Alien. Absolutely. Okay, so what we're dealing with is... somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000 motorcycle, and it does all the things you would do if you're trying to justify $100,000. So everything is carbon fiber. It is hub center steering, which is like fine, it's whatever, but. Like, I'm sure it works, it's fine, but again, it's just whatever. It's got a Ducati 12 whatever V-twin on it. So whatever the motor Ducati made before the V4, this was the hot motor before that. So it's like 200 horsepower or whatever. It's got the single-sided swing arm. It does the insanely stupid thing of the gas tank that comes over the engine and then turns into a seat. That weird concept bikes do. It's got a rear fender that really looks out of place sitting out underneath that seat. And every piece of it is angular and stupid looking. And I can't find... This is the other thing. Usually when these stupid motorcycles come out, they get a lot of coverage in things like Maxim magazine, right? They get a lot of... like Men's Fitness will do a write-up on stupid motorcycles, right? And... They all go like, oh, this is the ultimate, people that have no idea what the fuck they're talking about go, oh, this is the new ultimate motorcycle thing, whatever. And they just can't wait to tell you how they know about this super boutique expensive thing and how you should want it. I cannot find a write-up on this motorcycle where they don't call it ugly. Everyone calls it ugly. And you know why? Because it is. Honestly, it looks like a weird early video game polygon motorcycle and Bat Boy mixed together. Right? You remember Bat Boy from the Weekly World News? Because I was telling you this huge list of super dumb things this bike does, like bizarre instruments that don't make sense. Hub center steering, the seat that's attached to the gas tank and nothing like the floating seat, the single sided swing arm, all the crazy things it does. It does something that is an unforgivable crime. And unlike the Hypermotard, which can hide behind its preposterous, insane plot of a name for it, this bike has turn signals integrated into Bark Busters.
Okay. Wait. But why?
No one. So it can look like Bat Boy. I don't know why. Because it's just a thing. Because it's something they could put on there to help justify 100. Because it's more. I don't know what. I don't get it. On top of that, who thinks it's still cool to misspell things on purpose, right?
Yeah.
Alien, A-L-Y-E-N for alien? Are you kidding me? Why?
That's the level of class on the level of of Mountain Dew Code Red.
It's like... it feels like... Virus Alien feels like it could have been a track name on an early Korn album. Right? Yeah. Spelt this way. It would have come right after a song called Skater Boy with 8 in the name, right? Like the number 8 in it. This was a thing for a while to misspell things like that. And it's recently come back in the form of app names because it's so hard to come up, right?
Right.
But that's just born through necessity. Because you just can't, right? Everything's used up, so you really have to reach. Motorcycle names have not all been used up. There's still plenty of animals and weather events that we can just use, right?
Right.
Which reminds me, we need to do a game of made-up motorcycle here again pretty soon. But in a world where so many other really cool boutique bikes exist, or large OEMs are starting to make motorcycles on this level, like, why would you buy this and not an H2R?
Or two Fireblades.
Or two, yeah. yeah, the new all the R, like CBRRRR, right? What does this bring to the table? It's not competitive. It's not anything. And the other thing is it's like, it's just confusing and upsetting to look at. So it might look cool if you went to one of those supercar meetups with it. But outside of that, it doesn't make any sense. You can't just leave it parked on the road in a city because it costs too much, right? And the only thing you can say to people about it is that it's really expensive. So it's really just something that makes you look like a douchebag. I can't complain about the motor. The Ducati motor is great. This is out of the super hot Panigale before the V4. Hub center steering's whatever, but it's fine. It doesn't make any sense for mass production, but this isn't a mass produced bike, so I'm not going to be mean to it there. But I am going to be mean about the fucking Barkbusters, which are, in fact, let's talk about this a little bit more. Every angle of this thing's awful as I'm looking through pictures. If you find... let's stop. Before I talk about the Barkbusters some more, let's talk about these exhaust pipes. Have you got a picture of these exhaust pipes coming out the back?
Not a good one, no.
You should keep going through some pictures until you find them. So it's got one of those like wheel hugger things at the back, which usually right. I like. This one is awkward looking because there's just so much empty space and then that. And then the exhaust, like running a normal side shot, the exhaust looks like what would be a fender. But if you get a shot, there's these twin pipes that come out the back. that are ridiculous. They look like the exhaust off the Bee King, but someone cut a bunch of metal off of them randomly. Like, they look like you're gonna get tetanus from touching them. they look sharp and not in a sharp way, right? It's they look unfinished. That's what they look like. Have you found a shot yet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that not describe it? They look unfinished.
Yeah. That's pretty fair.
Now, I know a lot of these boutique bikes look weird on purpose, right? Because difficult to like is exclusive for some reason. And it doesn't matter if it's beautiful or not. It just needs to look expensive, right? I get that. But someone should be into the aesthetic, right? Somebody should be. But I challenge our listeners to find a write-up of this motorcycle that is complimentary on the looks, because I don't think one exists. Also, this bike finally is missing one component that you should expect on even the cheapest motorcycle. Even the cheapest of motorcycles should have this, and this bike doesn't have this component. Can you look at this, Wiggs, and guess what that is?
I have no idea.
It's going to blow your mind. A front fender.
Okay.
There's some little hugger piece that's like near the top of it, but it only blocks the radiator, which is really curved and strange and points or like faces down. But I cannot find it looks like there's nothing to stop a rock from just flinging straight up and hitting you in the face.
Oh, well, there probably isn't.
Right. There's a piece that protects the radiator, and that's it. There is no fender. Nothing extends front of the headlight on this bike. In front of the headlight, it's just tire, which does two things. It makes the bike look unfinished, and it makes it look uncomfortable. It's weird. It's really weird. I can get past the super odd radiator shroud that looks like Dracula wearing one of those short capes. Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what the front radiator shroud looks like on this? It's Batboy wearing a short cape. I don't know what else to say. I can get past the two little tiny uncomfortable stacked headlights. I can get past the fact that the hub center steering isn't incorporated aesthetically into the design at all. I can get past a lot of things. I cannot get past those bark busters. I cannot get past the fact that there's not a front fucking fender. For $100,000, you should get a fucking fender. Okay? It's like remember those 80s guitars that don't have a head on them?
Right.
They did it just so they could do it. They put like a Floyd Rose system on it. And they're like, oh, there's technically no need to actually have the head on this. We'll just take it off. Won't that be cool? And they did it with like one fucking guitar. And everyone went like, oh, now the novelty's worn off. This is a dumb idea. It just makes it look incomplete. That's what's going on here. You can't have a bike without a front fender. That's part of the fucking look. It's another place to be flourishy and cool with your design. Hell, it's what Indian like hangs its entire fucking hat on, right?
Right.
Fender design and Triumph too. Think about like the Triumphs with their front and back fenders, like the bathtub designs, the 21 and all that stuff. Like it's all part of it. This bike goes, nah, I'm an alien. Did we go in like a time machine back to 1995 when like alien t-shirts were cool again, and that's where the concept of this bike came from? Remember when like it's aliens and smiley faces had a big comeback? I feel this appeals to somebody who's gone like regressed back to that era of style with misspelling names and all kinds of And it's mostly sad because I love a boutique bike. I love the whole idea of boutique bikes. I like how crazy and kooky and uncompromised they get to be. I love how they're always ridiculously overpowered. I love so much about them. But this is dumb. This is dumb. I challenge any of our listeners to get upset with me about this choice, because this is just burning money, right? I found one write-up that said this company at one point planned to build the bike that Moto 2 wanted to use instead of the Triumph motor.
Okay.
Yeah. And... and then the only mention I could find of that on the follow-up was something where they said they couldn't find anybody who wanted to race these bikes, so they just had to sell all their prototypes and scrap the entire project.
Yeah, how is that going to work?
I know. There are people that race Tessie H2s. Not many, but... it's a thing. Some people have done it, right? This is less financially sound than Bimota.
Well, that's kind of an accomplishment.
And this is an Italian company as well. I've never seen an Italian company miss the mark this badly. But I'm
trying to think of like a weird trend that got super out of hand that was really dumb. It is kind of like the sunglasses that go straight over the top of your head rather than over your ears.
Yeah, a little bit of this has that aesthetic, that like Chronicles of Riddick aesthetic. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, it's like if you crossed Chronicles of Riddick with those stupid hats that looked like muffs and headbands with the weird colored hair coming out the top.
Yeah, it's... I just don't understand why you would spend so much money to look out of touch. Right? Because this is not a design from the future. It's not off-putting because we aren't ready for it. We've seen this kind of shit before. And it didn't work out very well. I mean, the Honda NM4 is a fucking supermodel compared to this bike, right? Like, if you thought the Honda NM4, which is the weird Batmobile looking thing, or Batbike looking thing, which I personally love, and I still need to own one at some point. Why this will just give you nightmares forever, right? If, okay, here we go. If the Honda NM4 is the bat bike from the Batman TV series, the Adam West TV series, this is from Batman Forever.
Yeah, that fits.
Right? This misses the mark that way. Okay? You might think the NM4 is a little too campy, a little too weird, a little too something. This nobody gets. Nobody gets.
Yeah.
Well, all this is missing is the nipples on the bat suit.
Well, it's like, you know, you go into the theaters, you start watching the movie. It seems a little outlandish, but you're like, okay, you know, this is kind of going a little bit into the old comic book style, but with a bit more, you know, it's the old comic book vibe with a little bit more of a modern style. So, okay, there's a villain and he's shooting a freeze ray and he freezes up this whole building. Okay. Okay, so all of his goons have ice skates. A little weird, but, you know, they anticipated this. It's understandable. It kind of works. It's a little goofy, but I'm just here to have fun. And then Batman and Robin click their heels together and ice skates come out the bottom of their boots, which, first of all, how do they fit?
Yeah.
There's a spatial dimension to this problem. And secondly, how the fuck did they know? They've never met Mr. Freeze before. Are they just always, have emergency ice skates on hand that occupy the same space as their feet? How does this work?
Was that Batman Forever? Or are we talking about Batman Forever is the one with,
I don't know. It all kind of blurs into one for me at this point.
You're thinking of Batman and Robin.
Maybe.
Which is the Joel Schumacher one with the nipples on it. Batman Forever is the one with Jim Carrey and what's his name? Iceman from Top Gun. Val Kilmer. The third Batman movie was it's from the very get-go it goes off the rails because they inject this moment that was just for a TV commercial where Val Kilmer's leaving in the Batmobile and Alfred goes, "Could I persuade you to take a sandwich with you, sir?" And he goes, "I'll get drive-through," right? And of course they put that in the McDonald's commercial or whatever, right? And that movie was batshit fucking crazy. It made no fucking sense. That's the one with the
was Batman. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the one with Bane in it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The really uncomfortable S&M like sex slave Bane. Right.
That and, was a great character.
And Uma Thurman. Yeah. Had Bane, Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy and whatever. Batman and Robin had Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl, who does almost nothing in the movie from what I remember. But yeah, George Clooney, Chris O'Donnell. Wait, or no, was Uma Thurman in? I can't remember.
That doesn't sound right. No,
but Jim Carrey's in Batman Forever. No, it's Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face. You're right. It's Uma Thurman as and Bane are in Batman and Robin, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is Mr. Freeze. Okay, we got it all straight now. But yeah, they're fucking disasters like this bike. They are exactly wrong in every single dimension. Like... Not only is it dumb that the turn signals are integrated into the Barkbusters on this bike, but they're not even good as turn signals. What are they? An eighth of an inch thick, you think? Like, there's these tiny slivers on the thing, right? And they're right on the corner of the Barkbusters, too. They are exactly where it's going to land first. Like, even if you don't break the Barkbuster, like, you're going to somehow break these turn signals. And they're so tiny. If anyone's even going to fucking see them. Ugh. It's so gross. It's so gross. How many of these things do you think exist?
I don't know.
It doesn't look finished. It just doesn't look finished. It's upsetting from every angle.
I think it's time to move on.
It is. I was about to go into how all the controls look just super, super, super duper basic. Like, this was somebody's first go with the CNC machine. Like, they're not contoured to match the look of anything. They're just, hey, how can I just barely get a brake pedal out of this machine? Oh, we're making stuff in-house, guys. Yeah, but it sucks. Ugh. That's why there's no contours on this thing. Like, it might as well all be made out of stamped fucking steel. Okay, let's move on. Let's move on. I could say more. The rear suspension is turned sideways for reasons I don't understand. Probably because it's got the floating seat, so there's nothing to really attach it to above the swing arm. So it's got to, like, go across. So it has to go through, like, 270 degrees of direction change to start providing suspension, which is dumb. Ugh. You have a single-sided swing arm, and the fucking rear shock attaches to the frame on the other side of the fucking bike. Like, what? All right, let's move. Okay, we're moving on. All right, electric bike updates. Let's get to that. You rode here on the bike.
Go. I did. Well, on most of the bike.
Okay. So we've proven that all the ideas, all the thoughts are sound. Now we can start. Well, you've got to refine this, but then we can scale it up.
Yeah, I did run into some problems. So the most glaring problem that I saw nobody mention was that with the larger axle, they do not provide you with a cassette spacer. Essentially, just, you know, on a bicycle, there's a little spacer you have that sits flush against, like, the inner race of the or on the outer race of the cassette side axle bearing, the point of which is that it then sits against the standoffs or the dropouts, so that you're not squeezing your cassette, which needs to spin with your wheel. They didn't provide one of those, which, you know, otherwise you would just bind the whole wheel up as you tightened everything down. So I did spend about half a day, like, literally filing down an oversized spacer to fit in between that and the lock nut on the cassette.
We have all kinds of things to make that possible. We have all, like, grinders and spindle sanders and stuff. How about tomorrow we get that piece made properly?
Well, it's good now. Look, clearance is clearance.
That works. Yep, sound engineering principle states clearance is clearance. That's right.
Okay. I got it set up now. Although at any point, if I ever want to get this, because of the weird axle size, if I ever want to get this cassette off ever again, I do have a cassette tool that we need to chop down so that it can fit over the axle, because the axle is, it's like 13 millimeters wide at the widest point, and there's no, like, standard cassette tool that's ever going over that. So weird things that like they don't even provide links to. It was one of the really weird things is because both of those items are things that they could have sold or linked to. Because it doesn't matter what bike you're putting it on, those two things would never have changed. So that was a little weird. Some other issues. The rear disc brake sits way too close to a lot of the body of the motor. And the rear caliper won't fit over it because it intersects with the body of the motor.
So do we need to get a larger rear disc for it then?
I need to get a larger rear disc and an adapter to like shift that up about an inch. The bike could also just use with more braking power altogether.
Yes, a trip to George's bicycle shop will get that done, no problem.
Yeah. And then I just have to grind down one of the pedals on the inside so I can get the pedal assist sensor on it.
Right. So, you rode it here, though, and you got the thumb throttle working. You've got all the modes and the display hooked up. There's a little bit of rerouting and cleaning up of the wiring and everything, but overall, it's fine. But we could make it look a little cleaner. And especially since this particular bike has all sorts of spots to route cables anyway, I feel like there's a way we could run a lot more of this inside the bike. But whatever. Even if not, we can just do things to it. So it's not crazy powerful, but it's pretty good. Honestly, that 28 miles an hour is about as fast as you want this kind of frame going. It was starting to get a little dancey on me with 28 no miles, suspension.
Yeah. 28 miles an hour with no suspension is enough.
And thin tire. Well, they're not thin. I mean, it's a mountain bike. They're not crazy thin. They're not like road bike tires.
No.
Well, in fact, we're thinking this weekend we're going to go test this thing. Me and the kids are going to ride off-road on some trails up in the mountains anyway. I think we should take this with us.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should come too on Sunday and we should do this. Because, yeah. I mean, hell, like even if you don't go the whole way with us, if you just ride till you've got half battery and then turn around, right? And we're never going to be going fast. You'll probably get decent range from the thing.
It's doable.
Yeah.
Well, oddly, with electric bikes.
If it runs out, like we'll just tow you back with one of the dirt bikes.
I don't know about that. Well, the paradoxical thing with a lot of electric bikes is that the most important thing you want to do is actually stay like at an optimum RPM and voltage. And it turns out that for like a lot of the time, you're actually losing range by going slower.
That's true. But also, you don't need to use it anytime you're going downhill.
That's true. I'll probably want to get the e-brake set up so that I can get some regenerative braking. Well, yeah, that's another thing on the to-do list. But it's all kind of coming together. It's just, it turns out there were just like 8 little things that slowed it up. But now that I've like at least gotten to ride it under power of the motor, I like it. I see the potential here, and it's like I would ride this in like 35 mile an hour traffic, just like racing from light to light, splitting, because it does it accelerates faster than a small car does.
Perhaps, yeah, it goes.
And I'm also totally willing to cheat, because this is a vehicle you absolutely can hop curbs. You could hop curbs in school zones on this thing.
Oh yeah. So let's talk about the next build, cuz this will be dialed in the next couple weeks easily.
Oh, it'll be complete. Yeah, right. Every way.
And so I think the way to go on the... Well, I don't know. Do you want to build a more serious e-bike, or do you want to do the electric motorcycle homebrew build?
I want to do the electric motorcycle.
So
I think the way to do it is to build it twice. Like, build the same bike twice.
Okay.
Build like a super bog standard electric motorcycle in the way that most electric motorcycles are built, and then tear it down and rebuild the weird idea that I have.
Well, I think this is where we reveal the brilliant name I came up with for our electric motorcycle brand. I'm pretty proud of this. I think it works really well. We'll leave it to the listeners. Tell us if you think it's brilliant or not. But I think our little electric motorcycle brand, and if anyone out there wants to get some stickers made or come up with a logo for this, I think it's NM. E-N-E-M. Just NM. Right? And so it's, and I know I just like complained about things being misspelled, but it's E-N-E-M for N-M, Newton meters of torque. Pretty cool, right? But you have to do this because, well, NM and Newton meters, all these are already taken, right? So for naming things like this, you kind of have to run to misspelling stuff anymore. But doesn't it just sound like an e-brand, right? NM.
Well, it's already very close phonetically to an e-brand,
which is
Enel.
Is it? Oh, I thought Enel was another gas company.
Or no, sorry. Oh no, sorry. Enel is the gas company, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although in Italy they pronounce it anal, which I will never stop laughing at.
Yeah.
Every time I.
Yeah, it already just sounds like a motorsports area name, Enel.
It does.
And it's a little bit clever. It's just clever enough without being way obscure and stupid. But all, you know, like, oh, well, that's a bit of a stretch to connect, right? It's good. Someone should help us come up with a little logo for NM. Get us some stickers. And then we need a naming convention for these bikes too. So,
I don't know. We should probably build one first.
What? Yeah, that's true. But anyway, I think we need to go by the junkyard, actually, because Anderson's, the junkyard down the road here, has a little motorcycle graveyard section. And all we're looking for is handlebars, forks, wheels, and brakes. And a seat. Maybe. Right? So with all of that, I think we can totally find some bike that was abandoned long ago, right? We've rebuilt tons of seats, so that's not a problem.
I mean, I'd even skip a lot of that stuff. I'd settle for forks, frame, and swing arm.
I think we want the wheels. That's a good, you know.
Nah, we don't want the wheels.
Well, what are we going to mount motors inside? I mean, it's got...
We'll get new wheels.
I guess so. Well, anyway. But we want the brakes. It's going to be tough for the brakes to be there if the wheels aren't there. I think we want the wheels. I think we can get a rolling frame, is what I'm saying. I think we can get a rolling frame from the junkyard. But we may not get the one that we want. We may have to like keep going and searching for a few weeks. But you can get a rolling frame from the junkyard for like $80. I think this is the way to go. Because I was... But, oh, I guess it won't have a title. But it's definitely going to be old. Anyway.
All it really needs is a VIN.
That's true. So, but we want as lightweight as possible. I still like the idea of a steel frame dirt bike with a swing arm. That's good. I guess I have an extra dirt bike swing arm if we don't have one. We just need to weld up that spot on it. It'd be good enough to use for a prototype anyway. Mm. And then, so let's talk how we want to up the power. Because there's two projects we want to do. I don't know if we mentioned this in the last episode, but I want to get a Kymco People and mount an electric motor in the front wheel of one. So
this is going to be like the lowest effort two-wheel drive possible.
Oh, yeah. But it's going to be brilliant because it's the hill climb assist. I'm going to put dirt tires on it and whatever. And I've also decided I am going to weld a piece in between the seat and the handlebars. But I'm only going to do that so I have something to grip with my knees when I'm riding it aggressively. Because that's what made me feel the most unstable riding off-road with the Vespa. And, frankly, the Trail 125 is I didn't have anything to grip as I was, you know, getting the bike over and I was trying to dance over bumps and stuff. So I just need to put something in. But we were talking about the controls for this as well. So rather than the thumb throttle, I think the thing to do on a scooter, because it's a CVT, so there's no clutch. You have both your brakes on the front like you'd have them on a bicycle. You've got just a regular throttle. I think take advantage. Well, I don't know. What do you think? Because I may want to stand up and get my grip with my knees. Do I do a thumb throttle for my left hand, or do I put in a pedal on the floor of the scooter to activate the electric motor in the front wheel?
I think it makes a lot of sense to have the thumb throttle.
Okay.
I mean, you could have both. You could have a redundant throttle.
That is true.
It's electric. You can do what you want.
That is very, very true. I like that. Okay.
I mean, you'll have to get creative with the wiring, and you may have to build a basic board, but
I want it to have reverse, too. I'd like to get a switch that has a stop, but then also goes backwards, too, so I can just flick the thumb throttle up and actually throw the thing in reverse.
So that's, with the way stuff currently works, that's going to be difficult. And again,
it's probably more realistic just to have another button, and when you push it, it just puts the bike in reverse at one constant speed.
Also, kind of not how it works right now, but if you can mess with controllers, you can do this.
Yeah. Okay, so what, remind everybody again, what are the battery size and the motor size and everything on this e-bike?
I want to say that the motor is 750 watts. The battery is a 48 volt, 16 amp hour battery. So it's about 750 watt hours. So it's, yeah, 3/4 of a kilowatt hour.
And how much do you want to step this up for an electric bike?
A lot.
Like 3 times, 4 times?
I'm thinking like 6 times.
Oh,
or okay. More. I'm thinking like two 4-horsepower motors. So, like, 3 kilowatts front and rear.
Which, let's say you get a bike together that, after all of that, weighs somewhere in the neighborhood of 160 pounds.
Well, it's going to be a lot more than that, because the batteries.
Well, I guess the batteries, yeah.
I basically want to make something with ridiculously good range compared to the total number of watt hours on it.
And then, well, what also, kind of range are you shooting for then?
I want to target 100 of like efficient miles, and then like, you know, in the most efficient way you could possibly ride it, get 100 miles, and then get the weight as low as possible off of that. Well, unless that range turned, unless that the amount of batteries required gets ridiculous, then we may compromise. But I feel like there's interesting ways that you can do it. Like, it's like with the UBCO, you know, the 2x2. I can see why they did all the things they did before and how, like, it made sense to just always have the motors on all the time. But there's been a lot of, there's actually been a lot of innovations in the way that e-bikes are designed and the way that hub motors are used. That there are ways you can, like, at the time, it totally made sense to always have both motors running. But there are ways you can make it work with two motors where running just one can be more efficient. But it matters very much on what kinds of motors you mix and match and how you configure them and how you set the throttling dynamically. And switching between things like voltage-based throttle and torque-based throttle input. There's all sorts of really cool things you can do that that are kind of hard, that require a lot of math. Like before I get anywhere close to even buying anything, it's going to be just hours and hours in a spreadsheet just getting this all set up.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's going to be cool. I think the coolest idea we've come up with thus far is the scooter with the electric front wheel assist.
But what's great is that that can literally be done in like an afternoon.
Yeah, it really can.
You just need, like, if you're willing to just get like a circular disc saw and like cut through the front and shove a battery in the glove box, swap a wheel out, zip tie the motor in, like, yeah, you can do this. Like a MotoGP pit crew could do this in like,
yeah, 20 minutes.
Well,
yeah.
Could do it in like the span of a tire change,
I guess.
If you want to completely bodge job it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to be cool though, cuz like I said, I don't know why, but I want a dirt scooter, and I think this is the power, this solves the power problem. This gets you up a hill. What's the
traction problem as well?
And, well, it's the torque problem. Because a lot of scooters make plenty enough peak horsepower. They just have no torque for it.
Right, but you've also got the advantage of using both wheels.
Yeah, I mean, 7 horsepower, honestly, is a lot more than you think it is.
Well, people have circumnavigated the world on less than 7 horsepower.
Right, but I'm saying if you... Sorry. Jeez. Sick for my kids. No, watch something like the Travis Pastrana's World Pit Bike competitions. They're doing backflips with 7 horsepower. Maybe 9, right? A Kymco 150, I think, is 11.5 horsepower. It just doesn't have the torque. But you put an electric motor on the front wheel, all of a sudden, you're not losing any speed going up those jumps. So you're taking advantage of all of it. And they're, like I said, they're going up hills and doing backflips off of jumps on these things. A lot more than you think is possible with that. And it's not a pit bike either. It's something full size. And give yourself something to grip with your knees. All of a sudden, hey, we're in business. Now, you know, you're not going to do backflips on a Kymco people. But... I
dare to dream.
I think there's some things down at the track that I could do that would shock people or impress them, right? I can get it sideways on some berms, on some turns there. I can I can get the back wheel out. I can clear some of the smaller tabletops. I can do a lot. Why not? There's some doubles that could be done with it.
Well, the other thing is that you'll be because it's a scooter, you'll easily be able to like stand up. And what if you've got the rear brake on the handlebars, you'll be able to, you know, take it to Mid Ohio and go to the burnout into the Kentucky corner, and you'll be able to go up to the burnout plate and do a front wheel burnout
and then a rear wheel
burnout.
That's right. I may have to bring a separate board so I can be doing two. That might be how we up the burnout competition for next year. Well, again, if we can throw the motor in reverse, because this only works.
You need a lot of power on the front one to do this. But yeah, if you can do a simultaneous front and rear burnout in opposing directions.
Yes.
This is getting
awesome is what this is getting. Yeah. So, okay.
Okay, but then we're getting into numbers where you actually have to you actually have to do some math there. And that gets hard. Not insanely hard, but
well, the point is that thus far this has been pretty damn successful. I thought you were going to run into a couple more problems. It turns out thus far the biggest problem you ran into was not realizing that you had tubeless fucking tires on your bike.
Well, they're not even tubeless tires. They're like tires that consist of a single tube. I don't know what they're called, but they're bullshit.
Well, I mean, you replaced them already, obviously, but well, not the front one, but I don't know. Your back tire looks pretty good. I think that's going to be good for the trails, what you replaced it with.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is working. Like, you can buy these components, and it's easily half the cost of buying an e-bike from a dealer. I don't know why Harley-Davidson is super-duper pushing their e-bikes all of a sudden. They're unbelievably expensive. And you've got this done for, what, $3,000 altogether?
Yeah. It was with international shipping as well.
Yeah, and we're looking... Honestly, the last time I was in a Yamaha dealer that was selling e-bikes, like Yamaha e-bikes, they were the cheapest one that did what this does was $1,000 to $1,500 more. The cheapest one. I don't think they had one for less than like $4,500.
Yeah, so essentially for about $1,900 or so for like the direct cost of the components, I skipped right to the top of what is like street legal e-bike without being a motor vehicle.
Yeah, and it, like you said, it was not hard to put together at all. I mean, it's yeah, with the exception of messing with the cartridge in the back, it's a lot of it's plug and play. Now, there's a lot of adjusting you've got to do to things, but, I mean, if you're not an idiot, this can all be done very easily. I mean, how many hours do you think you've spent putting it together this far?
Probably about 5 actual hours of messing around and figuring stuff out.
Oh, yeah, it's probably been 4 days of just researching how you were going to do it, but
well, also just waiting for things. And I mean, I haven't spent a lot of time yet. The most annoying thing is going to be going around and just sourcing these discs. By the way, bicycle shops. There's no bicycle shops like specializing in everything. Everything is just kind of the bicycle shop. And all bicycle shops apparently are working on bank time, which is really obnoxious. I don't understand how people are meant to go and actually purchase bicycles and bicycle equipment when you're closed on Saturday and Sunday? How does this work?
Is George's closed on Saturday?
Yeah.
Well, George is an older dude. Yeah.
Well, I think George gets to just kind of do what he wants at this point. But
yeah, like the big dealerships in Fort Collins and stuff. Yeah, why are they 9 to 5?
It's insane.
Because there's a couple real big bike shops up in Fort Collins. That might be open till 6 or 6:30. But yeah. Yeah, it is a little odd.
Well, also, if you're going to the bike shop, you're probably into bikes. You might be riding your bike. You might need parts for your bike. Your bike may not be in the greatest shape. And you're going to have like an hour and a half from getting off work to get to the bicycle store. I feel like this is a bizarre proposition to me. I don't understand why you wouldn't be closed Sunday and be closed Monday and just follow the dealership model.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't have a problem with them closing, or I think everyone should close at 5 on weekdays. But there should be some people that have a Saturday-Sunday weekend and some people that have a Sunday-Monday weekend. Yeah. I hate exploitation. It's like the only thing, this is the only thing where I get really like kind of political about things. And like when the local Walmart declared that they were going to start closing at midnight, I was like, finally, thank you. Yeah, we don't need these like low income people working till stupid o'clock in the morning and like not able to do things with their families and shit. And like, you know, how many kids aren't getting home like help with their homework and crap because Walmart's open till 4 o'clock in the fucking morning? And then they've pushed it back to like 10 on weekdays as well. And I was like, even better. Sure. I'm cool if the place just closed on Sunday.
Well, you see, this is where I think like vape shops have got this figured out. Because they're open till like 8 o'clock at night, or like 8 or 9, or sometimes even later. But their power move is they just don't open until noon on a weekday.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that helps in some ways. Yeah. Everything is changing the way it works with its hours and whatever. I mean, it was up to 2019 anyway, and then the last couple of years this has really fuckered everything, so who knows. But what ballpark do you think is going to be the expense? Let's say we can get a rolling frame for a motorcycle for $400, like tires, the frame, the brakes, like all that working for $400. What do you think the total cost might be for 100 miles range electric motorcycle build? Just ballpark.
I think it's going to be really expensive.
I think 5 grand, 6 grand.
I was thinking like 7 to 9 grand, with like 5 or 6 grand being motors. It may be like $4,000 worth of batteries and controllers. I think it's going to be outrageous for what we get out of it.
I'm kind of interested in trying to build something that's like the Zero FX, but just cheaper. Like, I don't care if, you know, like, I like the idea of getting a dirt bike frame and building something like a Zero FX that has 50 miles of range. I don't know why you want 100. I would make something trail oriented. I would go for off-road. Because if you just want super practical, then an electric scooter is the direction to go. Pack as much battery in as you possibly can and put it in this small compact thing that's never meant to leave town and get yourself 40, 50 miles of range that you can also recharge really quickly. I think that's the way to go. And if you... It's like electric scooter or electric off-road bike, I think, are the models that make the most sense. For something that goes on the highway, electric just isn't the weapon of choice yet.
Well, I think there are some things I want to try out, some principles I want to put to the test with it. it's going to be long and really dry to get into right now. So, but I think there's ways to have like more optimal ranges of speeds on electric bikes, where like where your highway mileage doesn't just get absolutely cratered by the way that you set the bike up. And I think dual motors can play a part in that, but it's something that requires like a lot of thought and configuration to get right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, once we get this underway, we'll give the people another update, but this is good. I'm super excited about this. So let's talk about a rural motorcycle that is appearing that we totally predicted was going to happen.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, when you picked first of all, when Honda just announced the Rebel 1100, we were excited about this and predicted this might happen. And then we said something else even before about that. This was a concept that Honda needed to bring back in a more serious way, and their other attempts at doing this weren't very good. But now it's basically Honda has released pictures of what this bike is almost certainly going to look like. We don't have price information, but in short, there's a new Honda Deauville, basically, right? Mm-hmm. So the Honda Deauville was the NV750. Was that the name of it, right? Or NV800. Well, anyway, this is the NT1100. So this is an Africa Twin engine in a Honda Sport Touring sort of chassis. So think something like the BMW 1200... a GS1200 RS, but it's a Honda, right?
Right.
So it's got the mildest of adventure-y kind of styling, but not really. It doesn't really look adventure-y, and it doesn't look sport touring in the traditional way a sport tourer looks. Sport tours have really fundamentally changed, right? I think they all kind of took a lot of cues from the Kawasaki Concourse in the late 80s, early 90s, and there were various combinations on that. And I don't know, what would be the bike that's established this aesthetic, you think?
It depends on which one, but if you look at like the fully dressed one, it's a little SV650. Or even SV1000. It's, I don't know. It's, I would say the SV, or not the SV, the V-Strom.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little V-Strom-y. But overall, I like it because it's not pretending to be an adventure bike. It's not pretending to be off-roady or anything like that. It looks comfy. It looks plenty sort of big enough. I love the red, white, and blue paint scheme for it. That's really nice. But basically, this solves so many problems for Honda all at once. So Honda tried to do something like this with the... what was it called? The VFR 1200?
1200X,
yeah. The 1200X. This is so much better than that already.
Well, the 1200X was really strange because it's like, in this riding position, with a bike this tall, why would I want this much power and torque out of a higher revving V4? It made no sense.
Yeah, well, again, that bike should have been marketed as a multi-strata killer. But instead, they didn't really know what to do with it. And then this bike also is for all the people that were haters, or still are haters, of a bike we love, the NC750X.
Yes.
we love it for all its practicality, but this has a little, this is going to have a little bit more of that fun factor. We're upping the horsepower substantially here. This is probably adding, what, another 40 horsepower?
It depends how they set it up, but yeah, it could easily be, depends if they're detuning it or not, but yeah, it could easily be 40 or 50 horsepower.
Right, and we're probably adding, what, 20 foot-pounds of torque?
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
Yeah, this thing's going to move.
I mean, it's not going to break any records, but for the style of bike that it is, it's going to be substantial.
It looks like it's going to do awesome wheelies, just looking at the geometry of it. It's got that Honda Bird look to it. It's very Honda.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it's just basically going to be a bit more of a slimmer profile and have just... I think it'll be like having like the best Nord you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, I'll tell you what too. This is a rare example of this. This is a bike that looks better than the concept design. Did you see pictures of the concept bike?
No.
If you just do a Google image search for it, you'll see some silver looking ones with the red Honda Power Sports badge on it, like no headlights. Mm-hmm. And then there was like a second version of it as well. There's like a couple different concept versions of it. They're all silver. But when you do go like straight up the first concept design to what Honda's revealed they're going to put in production with the paint schemes, you're like, oh, I want the production version. Fuck this noise. But yeah, I love this. Everyone is sort of, I don't know, that people are excited about a Honda. But just as we predicted, Honda did a sports tour with that motor. We thought, wouldn't it be great to bring back essentially what is the concept of the Deauville with a more exciting engine?
I would have been more stoked for a reimagining of the PC, of the PC 800 with it.
I still think that's on the table. Honda has wanted a little brother to the Goldwing since the late 80s. And they've tried it so many times. They've tried it with a maxi scooter. They tried it with a CX650. They tried it with just different trim levels of the Goldwing. And there's never really been that step down version of it that's successful. The Africa Twin done up as a touring bike is almost that, right? But the Africa Twin, I think they should just keep making better and better to be adventure-y. And I think there's a version of this that can be a baby Goldwing, you know, a real Silverwing. I really think that can finally happen now with this. But I honestly, like, I almost want to say, like, is this NT1100? Is this really the new Transalp? Like, I'm kind of surprised they didn't call it the Transalp after bringing back the Africa Twin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm also glad that they just dropped the adventure pretense. They just went, hey, this is what a sport tourer looks like now. Deal with it. Yeah, it's half-fared. Deal with it. I'm excited that it's half-fared, even. That's a cool look that hasn't been around for a while. I like half-fared bikes. They don't look incomplete like naked bikes do. This thing looks like you can just ride it all fucking day. Like you said, there's luggage options and things. The windshield looks decent. I just need to know the price at this point. But heck, if the Rebel 1100 is what, $9,000? Nine and a half, right?
Yeah, it was around there.
This has got to be a similar price. I don't see anything on here that should cost more than a Rebel 1100.
I mean, if it was over 11,000, I'd be absolutely shocked.
Yeah, but really, the big thing about this bike is let's just pat ourselves on the back for totally calling it. If we'd known the Rebel 1100 was in the works 2 years ago when they most likely started working on it, then we would have called this then. But as soon as we knew, like, oh, Honda's just building everything large displacement off of this platform. Cool. At this point, is there going to be, you think, a sort of... I mean, Honda's already got a 650 twin. Honda doesn't really have anything in that R7 sort of space. Well, no, because they still have an inline 4 in that for their 650, which is a great motor. I just wonder, are they going to make a true sport bike perhaps with this motor?
I don't know if I...
Because I think they could do a Silverwing, which would be their sort of like full-on tour bike version of this. They've got this little sort of standard bike slash sports tour. They've got the adventure bike. They've got a cruiser with it. The only thing really left is an honest-to-goodness sport bike.
Has there ever been like a fared sport bike with a parallel twin over a liter?
No, but Honda is the kind of company that, I mean, Honda tries everything. If Honda were smart, they would replace the CB1000R and make it like the CT1000R.
I don't know. That sounds really weird.
But why? Why? No one cares about having an inline 4 in that 1 liter naked style street bike, right? No one gives a shit that it's an inline 4. It has no cachet for anyone, right? At this point, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it's a CBR engine. Nobody cares. They would be better off just putting in a 1 liter twin and just making it something else. Call it like, I don't know, because Honda's going to have to go with their naming convention, right? So it's going to have to be, would have to be the CB1000T is what they'd have to call it if they stuck with their naming convention. So a CB1000T, they'd have to give it a nickname. They need some sort of bird nickname. Ooh. I don't know if Honda's ever used Raptor. They could just bring back the Hawk name. But that's an N model. That's an NV. And that wasn't an NV. That was an NT. What would be not Hawk? I mean, Honda doesn't have to use a bird name, but bird names are their thing, right? I'd have to think about it. I know we made a list of great bird names for bikes at one point. I just can't fucking remember what they are. But anyway, that's what I think the next best usage of this would be. Honda, revive your naked street bike line with this. Reduce cost. Get rid of that 1 liter engine that no one cares about. It's expensive to make. Just keep making it in the sport bikes. I know they're probably trying to justify keeping making it in the sport bikes by selling it in the street bikes as well, but they can't be selling that many of them, right? I mean, Honda knows what they're doing. The math must add up, but I have to imagine that the bike would stand out more as just a gigantic twin more than it would as an inline four. And I know we're huge fans of inline fours just because more cylinders is always awesome. But no one cares that it's a naked version of a sport bike. Nobody cares. We're just so culturally past that.
Yeah, I don't know.
And they want the bike to be vaguely retro anyway. A twin is way more retro than a four.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to do it. And even step down the displacement. Make it the same motor, but just shrink it to 1 liter. So you can still be the 1000. But it'll be the CB1000T, not the R. Right? Or the TR. The CB1000TR. RR. Whatever. Right? The CB1000TRR.
You know what's completely unexploited when it comes to motorcycle names?
What's that?
Dinosaurs.
Ooh.
All right, I think that's a dumb enough thought that we can end.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, those are long names with a lot of weird spelling. So, especially for foreigners, I don't know that's going to work super well. But you're right;
it's certainly going to be hard for the marketing when non-English speakers, and to be fair, a lot of English speakers can't spell the names of your products.
I mean, there's a lot of native English speakers that struggle with pterodactyls still. Which I know is not a dinosaur, it's a pterosaur, but or pterodon, one of the two.
I mean, we're definitely using pterodactyl for something.
We should. Well, yeah. If Honda was going to go with one of those names, that's the winged one, right? Okay. Let's see. I think we can hold off on GP and hit that up after the next race because it wasn't super exciting. But again, there are takeaways, but let's finally get one in under 2 hours for once, huh?
Yes.
And there was another bike I wanted to talk about. I can't remember what it was. But wait, we'll get to
it. We'll save it for next time.
Save it for next time. All right. So sorry I sound stuffed up and weird. Sorry we're in an echoey room. Sorry. But not sorry, because again, it's our free podcast that we just put out. Although I will say we are getting pretty much to a point at which I made a promise that I was going to start seriously looking at the concept of a Patreon. So I'm probably going to start thinking about that soon. I'm just going to throw it out there to people. Send us an email if you think you really, really legit would do something for a Patreon and if you would expect something in return for it. I don't know what we're going to do. I don't want this to turn into an obligation. One of the reasons we've been as consistent and as good about making this podcast for everyone is how we've been able to make it not a burden in our lives. And I'm still sort of against the idea of a Patreon or something for this show, but we have reached a listenership at which it warrants investigation. So, I don't know, send us an email with thoughts about that, but I'm resistant to it, but for many reasons. But whatever, that time has sort of come around. So send us those, send us ratings and reviews, or leave them for us, I should say. And remember, just like always, stay safe, stay tuned, and keep fighting the dragon. Are you ready to go out on this one, Swigs?
Let's do it.
All right.